to Ezekiel and said, "Moreover, thou son of man, take thee one stick and write upon it for Judah and for the children of Israel, his companion. Then take another stick and write upon it for Joseph, the stick of Ephraim, and for all the house of Israel, his companion. And join them one to another into one stick, and they shall become one in thine hand."
Welcome to Double Portion Inheritance with Maria Merola, brought to you by DoublePortionInheritance.com. And now, Maria Merola.
Good evening, Mishpacha, friends, family, and Messiah. Tonight is March 20th, 2014, and the title of my message is The Aleph and Tah, The Red Heifer and the Two Sticks. Now, what does this title mean? Well, you see, in ancient Paleo-Hebrew, we have 22 letters in the alphabet of the Hebrew alphabet, but in ancient Paleo-Hebrew, they're called pictographs. Pictograph letters actually paint a picture, and I'm not going to be able to do this teaching any justice on audio recording, but if you go to my website, doubleportioninheritance.com, and you go to the store tab, you'll be able to see my ebook there that you can download. It's The Aleph and Tah, The Red Heifer and the Two Sticks. Also, when I post this radio program on Hebrew Nation's website, I'm going to have the link that'll lead you to the blog. You can read it online. Also, you can read it at my website under the tab that says Media. You'll see Maria's blogs, and you'll find that blog, The Aleph and Tah, The Red Heifer and the Two Sticks. If you want to receive my flash drive, I have 60 ebooks on that flash drive. Included on that flash drive is this ebook called The Aleph and Tah, The Red Heifer and the Two Sticks. Now, why am I doing this teaching this week? Well, it seems that the enemy doesn't like the revelation of how our Messiah is revealed to us in these Hebrew letters. He doesn't like it. He's attacking it. There are people who are coming against the Paleo-Hebrew letters. They're making all kinds of false claims about the Paleo-Hebrew letters. There are people who are making false claims about the Tah, you know, the Hebrew letter Tah, which looks exactly like a cross, and they're telling us that, you know, that's a pagan symbol. Well, I'm here to talk about the true essence of idolatry. What is the true essence of idolatry? You see, in Exodus chapter 20, when Moses, one of the commandments is, "You shall not make any graven image," and he tells them not to bow down nor serve them. And so a lot of people misunderstand this commandment. They think it means that any image is an idol. You see, images are not idols until we bow down to them or serve them. You see, I have people that will tell me that because I use a lot of images and illustrations in my articles, in my teachings, that I've got graven images. Let's define what a graven image is. A graven image is something that is used as an object of worship. You know, there are people that have even gone to extremes saying that, you know, children shouldn't own baby dolls. But we have to understand the true essence of idolatry is when Satan takes all the created objects that Yahuwah has made and he turns them into idols. He wants us to worship the created object itself rather than the creator who made those objects. And so the cross that our Messiah died on, yes, it was indeed a cross. It was two sticks for two houses of Israel. And I'm going to talk about that tonight. The cross was not an idol initially. Yahuwah created the Hebrew letters, the Hebrew alphabet. In Genesis chapter 1, verse 1, it tells us, in the beginning, Elohim created the Aleph and the Tav. Right before the word, right before it says that he created the heaven and the earth, it says, in the beginning, Elohim created, and there's the symbol in, it's not represented in English. You're not going to see it in your English Bible. But if you go to the Hebrew, it says, in the beginning, Elohim created Aleph and Tav, the heaven and the earth. Well, you see, that symbol, Aleph and Tav, is in ancient paleopictograph letters, looks exactly like the red heifer or the head of an ox and two sticks or a cross. So what it's telling us is, in the beginning, our creator made these two symbols. He made the symbol of the Aleph and the Tav. He created the Hebrew alphabet. All 22 letters of the Hebrew alphabet point to our Messiah. Every Hebrew letter is a pictograph that paints a picture of him. And so, you see, if Yahuwah, our creator, made these two symbols that look exactly like a cross and a picture of a red heifer, then they can't be idols in and of themselves. It's only when people bow down and worship these objects that it then becomes a pagan symbol. And it's the same thing with the Magen David star. You know, I know that a lot of people think that that's a pagan symbol. Well, it's not really a pagan symbol in and of itself. It's only a pagan symbol when people put their trust in it, when they pray to it, when they use it as a talisman, some type of magic charm. That's when it becomes an idol. You see, the Magen David star is seen all over the place in creation. There are snowflakes that, when you put them under a microscope, they look exactly like the six-pointed star of David. There's an Israeli survivor flower that grows in Israel, and when that flower is seen under a microscope, it looks exactly like the six-pointed star of David. This Israeli survivor flower can survive without water for a very long time. And it seems like it's dead. It seems dead, but then when it rains, this flower resurrects. It comes back to life. And Israeli scientists have looked at this flower under a microscope, and it looks exactly like a six-pointed Magen David star. So obviously, if Yahuwah, our creator, has made these objects, he's made the letter Tav, the last letter in the Hebrew alphabet, which looks exactly like a cross in its original form, and he's made the Magen David symbol in the form of snowflakes and the Israeli flower. If he's made these objects, they cannot be pagan symbols in and of themselves. You see, the logic behind saying, oh, well, crosses are evil, that would be like saying that cows are evil because the Israelites worship the golden calf. Now, just because they worship the golden calf, does that suddenly make cows evil? Does that suddenly mean we don't go out and eat beef any longer? That's crazy. That's ludicrous to believe that. So there are people that are out there saying that these objects are inherently evil of themselves. And that is not true. You see, Yahuwah, our creator, made all things. But what does Paul tell us, or Shaul tell us? The apostle Shaul tells us in Romans chapter 1, verse 26, I believe, he says that the people whose minds become reprobate, he says they worship the creature rather than the creator. Listen to what he says. He says they change the truth of Elohim into a lie and worship and served the creature more than the creator, who is blessed forever. Amen. So what they did was they begin to worship and serve the created object more than the creator. So we're not supposed to worship objects. We're supposed to worship the one who created those objects. Okay, so with all that said, I'm going to continue this study on the Aleph and Tav, the red heifer, and the two sticks. Now, as I already stated, in Genesis 1:1, if you were able to read this in the original ancient Paleo-Hebrew, you would see that it says, in the beginning, Elohim created Aleph and Tav, the heaven and the earth. So just before he says the heaven and the earth, it says that he created the Aleph and the Tav. Now, Satan hijacked these symbols later on, and he used them for pagan sun god worship. But Long before that, Yahuwah used them in the Hebrew alphabet to illustrate a prophetic picture of our Messiah as the sacrificial animal, the red heifer, being nailed to a cross. Now, after the Exodus, when the Israelites were in the wilderness, they began to murmur and complain against Yahuwah. And so he set a fiery serpent to bite them. He sent them a fiery serpent to bite them, and many of them died, as we read in Numbers 21:6. But many of them began to repent, and when they did, Yahuwah instructed Moshe to make a pole and put a fiery serpent on the pole for them to look upon, and then they would not die from being bitten by the serpent. This was a prophetic shadow picture of the future Messiah who would later on become a curse for us, as we read in John 3:14. But later on, this image of the serpent on a pole became an idol that was used for worship, and Yahuwah was against this. The Israelites also began to worship a graven image of a golden calf. And we see that the golden calf, or the image of the red heifer, or the ox head, is inside the Aleph and the Tav. And because of this, he broke the first covenant that he made with them. When Moses broke those first set of stone tablets, as we read in Exodus 32:19, that was Yahuwah showing them he did not want them to worship these created objects. Now, later on in history, even the Christian churches began to worship and bow down to this image of a Tav as a wooden cross. These symbols were always meant to symbolize our Messiah, but we are commanded not to bow down and serve these images. As we read in Exodus 20, verse 5, they only serve as illustrations for us, nothing more. We are commanded not to worship Yahuwah through graven images or created things. Now, you will be able to see this if you read the blog or if you get the ebook. You'll be able to see all the illustrations that I show. Now, in the illustration of the Aleph in Tav, in its earliest ancient form, it shows us a picture of the red heifer, which looks like a head of an ox, and it's being nailed to two sticks. Now, these two sticks of Ezekiel 37:16 represent the house of Ephraim and the house of Judah. You see, the house of Ephraim and the house of Judah are two houses of Israel. We read about that in Isaiah 8:14, about both houses of Israel. Both houses were divided in 1 Kings 12 after King Solomon died. You see, they were all united. All 12 tribes were united under King David. And then after Solomon died, the two kingdoms were divided. 10 of the tribes went north and they followed Jeroboam. And King Jeroboam led them into idolatry. And the other two southern tribes of Benjamin and Judah remained in the land. And they continued to keep the feasts and they continued to keep the Sabbaths until at some point even the house of Judah got into idolatry and they were taken captive also into Babylon. But my point in sharing all this is Ezekiel 37:16 is a prophecy, and Yahuwah was telling Ezekiel, he says, Ezekiel, I want you to take one stick and write upon it for Judah, and I want you to take another stick and write upon it for Joseph, which is in the hand of Ephraim, his son. And he says, and I want you to join these two sticks together and make them as one stick in my hand. Now, if you look up that word for stick in Ezekiel 37:16, it's this Hebrew word etz, which means tree. So we could literally read that verse as if he's saying, Ezekiel, I want you to take two trees. I want you to take one tree and write upon it for Judah, and I want you to take another tree and write upon it for Ephraim. Now, you know, this word etz can also mean a branch. So more than likely, it was two branches. However, the point is that this was a symbol of Yahuwah wanting to join the two houses of Israel back together again. He did not want them to be divided. He allowed them to be divided for a time, but that was not his ultimate purpose. His ultimate purpose is to join both houses back together again. And so the purpose of our Messiah at his first coming was to join the two houses back together again. In fact, he says he had come for the lost sheep of the house of Israel. So it only makes sense that Yahuwah ordained this symbol, the Aleph and the Tah, the red heifer and the two sticks, from the beginning, because he was trying to show us a picture of our Messiah. You see, Messiah, Yahushua, is the Aleph and the Tah. He is the first and the last letter of the Hebrew alphabet. He is the beginning and the ending, as we read in Revelation 1:8, and also in Revelation 1:11, Revelation 21:6, and also Revelation 22:13. The last Hebrew letter, the Tah, is shaped just like a cross in the most ancient Hebrew, because it means that we must come to the end of ourselves, the end of our old sinful nature. In Psalm 51:5, David declared, "Behold, I was shapen in iniquity, and in sin did my mother conceive me." See, we've all been born in sin. We have all been born with a fallen nature. But our Mashiach, our Messiah, came to put an end to this sinful nature, not the Mosaic Law. He did not come to end the Mosaic Law. And this is precisely why Yahushua, our Messiah, commands us to deny ourselves. He says, deny ourselves and take up our cross, the storos. The word cross in Greek is storos. He says, deny yourself, take up your cross daily and follow me. That's in Matthew 16:24. Now, if you look up that word for storos of 40 days of weeping for Tammuz, and, at the beginning of this 40 days of so-called Lent, the Catholic Church has the priest put ashes on the foreheads of people, and it's in the shape of a cross. Now, it's not the cross that's evil, of course. It's not the cross itself that's evil, but the Catholic Church uses it in a perverted way. And so, in Ezekiel chapter 9, Yahuwah tells Ezekiel, about this messenger that he's sending. He says that the messenger is going to put a mark on the foreheads of everyone whom he has sealed unto redemption. Everyone who doesn't have this mark are going to be destroyed. That's men, women, children. All who do not have the mark are going to be destroyed. And if you look up that Hebrew word for mark, as I said, it's the cross. It's the Tah. It symbolizes our Messiah. Now, in Galatians 6:17, Shaul talks about this cross. He says, "From henceforth, let no man trouble me, for I bear in my body the marks of Yahuwah," the marks of the Lord Yahushua, the Master Yahushua. Okay, so what is he talking about there? Which marks? What are the marks that he's talking about? He's talking about the same mark that Ezekiel was shown. This mark is the Tah, the cross, the two sticks. Now, you can't see it in this teaching because you would have to get the ebook, but in my ebook, I show an illustration of this letter, the Hebrew letter Tah, the progression. It, in its earliest form, it looked exactly like a cross. And then Middle Hebrew, it began to look more like a letter X on its side. Late Hebrew, it started to look like a lowercase n. And now in modern Hebrew, it just looks like, I don't know, it doesn't have any really descriptive shape or form. But what Paul was talking about when he mentions the word cross many times in his epistles, he wasn't talking about the object of the cross. Once again, he's talking about self-denial. And so these two letters, the Aleph and the Tah, represent, our animal-like nature. The Aleph is a symbol of the red heifer, and this symbolizes our animal-like nature. You see, we're sinful. We're prone to sin. And animals don't think about what they're going to do. They don't have, a free will. Animals just act on their instincts. But human beings are given a conscious will whereby we decide to whether we want to, sin or not. Animals don't decide those things. Animals are just instinctive. They do what instinctively they were created to do. And so when the Messiah became the red heifer sacrifice, he symbolizes our animal-like nature. We are to die daily to that animal-like nature. And so when we kill this animal-like nature by denying ourselves daily, we are able to walk by the power of the Holy Spirit, the power of the resurrected Messiah, the Ruach HaKodesh. Now, two different words are used to describe the instrument upon which our Messiah was nailed to. The staros is number 4716. It means a stake or a pole, a post. It even means a cross. It means an instrument of capital punishment. It also means self-denial. It means the atonement of our Messiah. So you see, the staros, the stake, is not just an object. It has more than one meaning. But there's another word that we see in the Strong's Greek Concordance, and it's in the book of Acts. It's Acts number 5:30, Acts 10:39, and Acts 13:29. It says he was nailed to a tree. And that word for tree is number 3586 in the Greek Concordance. It's xylon. It means a beam from which anyone is suspended, a gibbet, a cross, a log or timber with holes in which the feet, hands, neck of prisoners were inserted and fastened with thongs, a fetter or shackle for the feet. What this means is that there were actually two different pieces of wood. The piece that he carried across his shoulder was a cross beam. It was not the whole entire cross. He carried a xylon, which was a cross beam, but the piece that was the staros was already there. It was a permanent structure. They didn't put a new staros in the ground every time. That wouldn't be practical. And so our Messiah was crucified on two sticks. He became a curse for us because he nailed sun god worship, Tammuz worship, to the cross. And so the image of the cross was created by our creator Yahuwah at creation. But the pagans and the occultists have hijacked this symbol and they use it as an act of worship. So in the beginning, our created made the image of the Aleph and the Ta. Therefore, it cannot be a pagan symbol. It's not pagan until the pagans hijack it, until Satan hijacks it and uses it for his perverted and twisted purposes. And you see, from the beginning, in Hebrews 10:5, we're told that from the beginning, he created the Aleph and Ta. He already ordained from the foundation of the world that our Messiah would have to die. It says, wherefore, when he comes into the world, he says, sacrifice and offering you would not, but a body have you prepared for me. In Hebrews 4:3, it says, for we which have believed do enter into rest, as he said, as I have sworn in my wrath, if they shall enter into my rest, although the works were finished from the foundation of the world. See, he's telling us that the work of salvation was already finished from the foundation of the world. In Hebrews 9:26, it says, for then must he often have suffered since the foundation of the world. But now once in the end of the world has he appeared to put away sin by the sacrifice of himself. And now in Revelation 13:8, we're told, and all that dwell on the earth shall worship him whose names were not written in the Lamb's, in the book of life of the Lamb slain from the foundation of the world. In other words, our Messiah is that Lamb slain from the foundation of the world. Okay, so he's always been that Lamb from the foundation of the world. In 1 Peter 1, verse 19 and 20, we're told that he was foreordained before the foundation of the world, but he's been manifested in these last times for us. So we're told that this sacrifice of the Lamb has always existed in eternity. So we can see from the scriptures that Yahushua Mashiach was always in eternity past the Lamb slain from the foundation of the world. This means that he is that sacrificial lamb, present, past, and future. We know now why Satan has hijacked the symbol as an object of worship for pagan sun god worship. But Satan has no idea what he was doing. He didn't realize that in trying to sacrifice our Messiah, he was actually destroying his own kingdom. Just like Haman in the Persian Empire, as we read in Esther 7:9-10, He prepared a gallows for Mordecai and for the Jewish people, thinking he was going to destroy them, thereby preventing the Messiah, the Jewish Messiah, from coming through that lineage of the house of Judah. But Satan's plan backfired. Instead, that gallows was used to destroy Haman and his 10 sons. Similarly, the cross was created to destroy sin, pagan sun god worship, and to unite both houses of Israel. And both houses of Israel are symbolized by two sticks, two poles, two trees. And so we see that these two sticks demonstrate the two houses of Israel, and they also demonstrate the two greatest commandments. You see, our Messiah gave us two of the greatest commandments. He says, two of the greatest commandments have been given as the most keystone commandments. Mark 12:30, he says, "You shall love Yahuwah, your Elohim, with all your heart and with all your soul and with all your mind and with all your strength. This is the first commandment. And the second is like it, namely this, you shall love your neighbor as yourself. There is none other commandment greater than these." You see, these two greatest commandments, one commandment symbolizes our vertical relationship with Yahuwah, and the other one symbolizes our horizontal relationship with our neighbor. So the pole that is vertical symbolizes loving Yahuwah, our Elohim, and the pole that is horizontal symbolizes loving our neighbor. Now, one thing I want to bring out is that creation itself testifies of this symbol called the cross or the Ta. Now, if you look at any medical journal, you will be able to see a laminin cell. A laminin cell looks exactly like a cross. You see, laminins are a family of proteins that are an integral part of the structural scaffolding of basement membranes in almost every human and animal tissue. You see, laminins are what hold us together, literally. They are cell adhesion molecules. They are what hold one cell of our bodies to the next cell. Without them, we would literally fall apart. If you look up laminin in any scientific or medical piece of literature, this is what you'll see. Now, you can't see the illustration unless you get my ebook off my website, but the body of Messiah is literally being held together by his one sacrifice on the cross. Even the Apostle Paul or Shaul saw this in Ephesians 2:15 through 16. Listen to what he says. He says, "Having abolished in his flesh the enmity, even the law of commandments contained in ordinances, for to make in himself of two one new man, so making peace, and that he might reconcile both unto Elohim in one body by the cross, having slain the enmity thereby." You see, the laminin cell is literally created to hold our human bodies together in the same way. The cross or the two sticks of our Messiah was literally made to bring both houses of Israel together. And literally, the cross is holding the whole body of Messiah together. Our Messiah embodied the two houses of Israel. He became the least, in other words, the last, at his first coming. He came as Messiah ben Joseph, the suffering servant. But then when he resurrected, he became the firstborn over all creation, Colossians 1:15. He humbled himself and became the least among us. In his role as Yehusef or Joseph, he was portrayed as the suffering servant. But when he returns, he will be the first, just as Messiah ben David, the conquering, reigning king. He will then bring together both houses of Israel as the first and the last. And so there will no longer be competition in his house, because both houses will become one stick, one olive tree. When the remnant from both of these houses become born again, and when they put on immortality or incorruption, they both will become his firstborn. And so he made two sticks for the house of Judah and the house of Ephraim, one stick or one tree in his hand. What is even more revealing is that when you look up this Hebrew word for stick in the prophecy of Ezekiel 37:16, the word is etz, which means tree. And two trees were used to make two houses of Israel, one again. Now, the first time that Israel is likened unto an olive tree is in Jeremiah 11:16. Yahuwah, it says, Yahuwah called your name a green olive tree, fair and of goodly fruit. With the noise of a great tumult, he has kindled fire upon it, and the branches of it are broken. But this one olive tree became two separate olive trees in 1 Kings 12, when Judah and Ephraim became two separate nations under King Jeroboam and King Rehoboam. This gives clarity now for the entire purpose of why our Messiah came in the first place. His first coming is explained perfectly by the Apostle Shaul, or Paul. Listen to what he says in Ephesians chapter 2, starting with verse 11. He says, Wherefore remember that you being in time past goyim, Gentiles in the flesh, who are called uncircumcision by that which is called the circumcision in the flesh made by hands, that at that time you were without Mashiach, being aliens from the commonwealth of Israel and strangers from the covenants of promise, having no hope and without Elohim in the world. But now in Mashiach, Yahushua, you who are sometimes far off are made near by the blood of Mashiach. For he is our peace, who has made both one and has broken down the middle wall of partition between us, having abolished in his flesh the enmity, even the law of commandments contained in ordinances. For to make in himself of two one new man, so making peace, and that he might reconcile both unto Elohim in one body by the cross, having slain the enmity thereby, and came and preached peace to you which were afar off and to them which were near. So what were these ordinances? The law of commandments contained in ordinances. These ordinances, if you look up that word in Greek, it's dogma, and it means a man-made decree. It means man-made traditions. These ordinances kept the two houses of Israel separated. And you see, it's because Yahuwah divorced the 10 northern tribes of Israel in Jeremiah 3:8 that the rabbis thought that they had to keep these tribes from being allowed to come back into covenant. Therefore, these rabbis invented man-made ordinances that would enforce the building of a wall around the outer court of the temple. This wall would then prevent these estranged tribes from being allowed to come to the temple of Yahuwah. And so the Greek word for ordinances that the Apostle Paul uses in Ephesians 2:15 is dogma, which means a man-made decree. The rabbis made extra laws that were not in line with the Torah. They were not in keeping with the Torah. And these man-made laws kept the Gentiles out of the temple. They prevented them from being allowed to come to the outer court so that they could hear the Torah, the Mosaic law, and be saved. You see, it was the enmity. What does that word enmity mean? It means hatred. The enmity between these two houses of Israel, the hatred, was caused by the sins, the sinful nature. And because of our human sinful nature, there's been enmity, there's been rivalry between both houses of Israel, between Jew and Gentile. And there's been idolatry in both houses. And also, it was the sins of these rabbis, whereby they introduced such a law that would keep the Gentiles afar off from the covenants of promise. But you see, Messiah came to abolish not the law of Moses, but he came to abolish this enmity, the hatred. Now we understand why Satan has tried to twist and pervert this image of the cross, because the image of the cross represents two olive trees, two sticks, and two houses of Israel. He wants to pervert and twist this image because he knows that that symbol is what literally is holding the whole body of Messiah together, in the very same way that the laminin cell is holding the human body together.
We hope you enjoyed today's broadcast and that you are encouraged in your walk with Messiah through the teaching. To visit Maria's website, visit DoublePortionInheritance.com. That's www.DoublePortionInheritance.com. This broadcast depends on the love gifts and offerings of listeners like you. To send a donation to Maria's ministry, write Double Portion Inheritance, Maria Marola, P.O. Box 7311, Fredericksburg, Virginia, 22404. Or you can donate with the PayPal button at DoublePortionInheritance.com. For Maria and all the ministry team at Double Portion Inheritance, may Yah bless you.